This is CliffCentral.com.
Good day. Sure. You know, I need to get used to this good morning, good afternoon thing, you know, after having moved from a morning slot. So, good afternoon. Welcome to Opinion Booth with myself, Sonia Booth, and today's Normid. that's what she considers herself, right? We're gonna get into, you know, more into that. We have Madame Felicity Sheba, the African goddess, the
Hello.
African queen, the Nubian queen. Should I continue?
Yes, keep going, girl. I'll pay you later.
But you're already blushing. So
I'll pay you later.
You're already blushing, so I think we've got enough compliments, enough
well
titles.
Thank you. Listen, I'll take them. Coming from you, I'll take them.
Okay, so I have in studio with me a fashion designer, a columnist, a golf blogger, an amateur golfer. Can I call you also a TV presenter?
Yeah, you Why can. Not? I think the title is still there.
It's still there, absolutely. But you're doing a lot of stuff on TV, whether it's mainstream TV. You are still a TV presenter. I mean, you still look hot, so you're going to be a TV presenter for many, many, many years to come.
Yeah.
So now, first things first, I want to know about earliest memories of your life in Timbutini. That's a Swati word for a place of goat. Am I right?
Timbutini, yes.
Timbutini.
Place of goat.
So your earliest memories?
Timbutini is a farm where my parents built when I was in my late 20s. So I actually grew up in Manzini.
Okay.
So Timbutini is the farm where my mom lives now, where my family is now. But Manzini is where I grew up.
Yeah.
Yes. So okay. Earliest memories, oh my goodness, are just of, you know, being free to do whatever. Lots of swimming and just, you know, playing in the streets, dusty streets of Manzini.
Dusty streets, and yet you had a swimming pool?
Well,
I like that.
No, I didn't have a swimming pool at home, but I swam because I swam at school and I swam for the Swaziland national team.
Oh, geez, that was major.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So now, I googled you. I just because I can. I mean, I've known you for over. Sure, okay. Without revealing our age, I've known you for
over 20 years.
Yeah. My word.
Yeah.
Hard to believe.
Right.
Okay. So I googled you because I can and because I had a little bit of data. So now, are you interested to know the top three items when somebody types Felicity Sheba?
Oh my goodness.
Are you curious or have you ever Googled yourself?
Once I've Googled myself a long time ago, but I haven't done it lately.
So are you curious?
Yes. Okay. Go on.
Top three items.
Yeah.
When people type Felicity Sheba, the third word that they type in is age. Second,
really?
Married. The word married. Third, pictures. So I'm thinking people are curious about your age. I mean, it's obvious you have good genes, number one. Number two, they want to try their luck and ask you out on a date. And number three is confirmation you have stalkers and they have your pictures on their bedroom walls. I mean, how does that make you feel?
No. I don't think anyone has a picture of my bedroom wall. But I remember once when we were at SABC, we did a youth program at one of the prisons, and one of the prisoners came out and asked me to sign a picture of myself. It was one of those drum middle pictures that had been printed, and he had it out. Yeah. So, but no, I don't think anyone has got a poster of me in their room right now.
A prisoner.
I would be shocked.
Wow. Okay. So you never I'd received be worried. Those. What did we used to call them? Pet pals. You know those letters?
Yes. Yes. Yes.
You never got one from a prisoner. I hope not.
No, I never did.
I mean, so yeah, I'd be worried, especially considering we've got how many prisoners who have escaped from Sun City?
16?
21.
What? Oh, I thought it was
murderers,
16.
We have murderers. Some of them are murderers. We have rapists.
I saw that. I thought it was 16. The number's gone up?
You're right. It's 16, but 16, 21 when it comes to murderers and rapists.
Doesn't matter. I mean,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, the scary part is that
they are. I just turned this conversation a little morbid.
I know. Do you need bodyguards? No. You okay? So you're not worried. I hope you don't live near Sun City.
No, Lone Hill.
You know, people in Lone Hill and Sunning Hill should be. I mean, I would relocate. You know, I'd move. You know, to a hotel far away, like Dimbudini in Swaziland or something.
No hotels in Dimbudini, but you can use my mom's house as a hotel. All
right. So now, back in 1999, she graced our TV screens as a continuity presenter.
Yes.
And now, as I said, you're a golf blogger and presenter. I mean, you're still a breath of fresh air. We still want to see you on TV. I'm not only speaking for myself, but for millions and millions of people out there. I mean, I used to watch TV just to admire your beauty because, you know,
wow,
your kind of beauty is like when you walk into a room, you command attention. Not that you seek attention, but I mean your aura. I mean, forgetting, you know, notwithstanding the way that you dress, because you're always fashionable, because obviously you're a fashion designer, and fashion designers always, you know, have an opportunity and the talent to make their own clothes and look fabulous all the time, like every day.
I'm not always fashionable. Remember, I'm always in my denims most of the time.
But you rock denims in a very fashionable way. And I know you're a fan of your sneakers and your sandals and your flats and your pumps, but you still look fashionable.
Yeah, yeah, well, thanks for that.
So now, I know that being a nomad definitely keeps you young, carefree, free-spirited, easygoing.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. Traveling around, I've lived in a couple of countries, and traveling around sort of keeps you on the move and sort of young. Yes, if that's what you want to call it. Young. It keeps you energetic.
Forever young.
Energetic.
I like that.
Because the energy you have to put in when the required energy you need to put in when you have to travel is a lot.
Mm.
You know, it takes out a lot. It takes a lot out of you. So you kind of have to have that energy.
Mm.
And I like that. I love traveling.
So now, tell me about Felicity that made the soccer, basketball, and swimming teams decades
ago. Wow. That Felicity was the sporty princess. And I got that nickname because looking at me, you wouldn't really think I'm all that sporty. But I did. I ran track. I had the 100 meters, 200 meters long jump, and I held those records for a good 3 years in high school. You know, I swam for the Swazi national team. I played basketball, point guard, played a little bit of soccer, but there wasn't enough time in the day. Funny enough, I always wanted to play golf, but I just never had the time. And, I eventually picked it up when I was 30.
Mm.
And I haven't looked back.
We're gonna talk about you as a golf addict, even though you don't want to admit that
you don't
want to admit that you're a golf addict. But I mean, I'm sitting here listening to you, and I mean, I'm kind of envious because I mean, you spoke about, you know, the fact that you had an access to a swimming pool. I'm from Pimville in Soweto, and the swimming pool was like far, far away, and I mean, you had to pay money to, you know, get to a public swimming pool. But anyway, and I'm sitting here thinking, she's a girl. She had a good life. She also wanted to play golf as a 8-year-old. You know, it's like we didn't like kids like you, you know, growing up. You know, cheese girl, you know, girls whose families had money. We didn't like you at all. I'm just putting it out there. Anyway, so you...
But I was not a cheese girl. My mom worked hard. She was like a single parent of four kids. So she worked really, really hard.
You were still privileged, and we didn't like you at all. And I speak for many young girls who came from not so...
But you know what? You know what it is, though? Families. I honestly think it really is the difference of growing up in Swaziland and growing up in Soweto. It's not about privilege.
Yeah.
It's about the fact that you grew up under different circumstances with regards to racism and all those things and apartheid. So the difference was we had access to all those things, you know, and that really was because you could have been from like a average, even underprivileged family, but you still got to swim.
You know what I admire about the Swati nation or the Swati people is how much they value education. I mean, Swatis are some of the highly, highly educated people I know. Swatis, Zambians, Botswanians, Zimbabweans. Zimbabweans.
I lived in Zim for 4 years. And
I remember.
And yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that's where the golf bug hit.
Yeah.
You're going to tell me more about that. So now let's go back. You studied fashion design and technology at UJ.
Yeah.
Did modeling influence this? Because you were also a model for many, many years.
No. Funny enough, I studied fashion. I always knew I wanted to be a fashion designer. You know, I started sewing when I was 9. I started making my own clothes. You know, I made my own clothes to dance prom and all those things. But so I always knew that's where I was headed. I started studying fashion design. My first year of fashion design, I got scouted by a modeling agency. So modeling was never, ever in the picture for me. It was never, ever a thought. I just never, you know, I was a tomboy. I was a tomboy. I wore sneakers. I wore jeans. I wore shorts and t-shirts and hats. You know, I collect caps on a daily basis. So it wasn't a thing for me. I didn't think I was... Not that I didn't even, like, I thought that I was model material. I didn't think that far. All I knew was I want other girls like you, to wear my clothes, you know. So first year of uni, I got scouted by an agency and I said no because I didn't quite understand what, you know, what do you mean? Come and model. I don't get that. And then I bumped into a friend of mine in the second year and she said, hey, come see me at work sometime. I want to introduce you to something. And I looked for her. It turned out she worked at a modeling agency and she was a booker. It's a friend from high school, Vanessa Janssen. And I was like, what is this? She says, it's an agency. I saw you and I thought, oh my gosh, you'd be perfect for this. And I said, and then I said to her, what do I do? What does this mean? And she says, you just model and make money. I said, okay, I like the second bit. Let's go. Let's do it. Let's go ahead and do it then. And so we did a quick photo shoot and next day I was booked for my first job with True Love. And it just, and then that's it. That's.
And I mean, you were gracing covers of like magazine after magazine, publication after publication. You did a lot of TV adverts, right?
Yes, I did. I did over 25 ads.
You cleaned up.
Yeah,
you cleaned up. Models like you, we used to say, no, this one cleans up. Because, I mean, you take up all the commercials. We knew that if Felicity Sheba was there at the auditions, chances are she's going to get it.
I think with the commercials, it was more, you know, sometimes you know, with commercials, they kind of like the girl next door.
Kind you of. Know girl next door, kind of.
Come on. No, but really.
Listen to this woman. I mean, that humility. I'm not buying
it. No, but
it.
Seriously, though. Think about it. That's the feedback that I got. They like the girl next door, kind of. Who can, when then they put makeup on you, then you kind of transform into something else.
There is nothing girl next door about you. Unbelievable. Let's move on. I mean, really? Girl next door.
Yeah.
You can't put the name Felicity Sheba and girl next door in one sentence.
Girl, come on.
Okay, never mind. You know what? Let's move on. So now, I love the name Sheba, easy living, because it says comfortable.
Yes.
Wearable designer clothing.
Yes.
Deliberate.
Yes.
Okay.
Very.
So the name just came about because you wanted for people to know that you design clothing that any woman would actually
can wear comfortable.
They're wearable.
I want you to feel comfortable in my clothing, but still look beautiful and still feel sexy and still
fashionable
and all those wonderful things and not feel restricted. And you know what I mean? So it is about making clothing that is just simple, easy, beautiful, that any woman can feel like, you know what? I can rock that. Yeah.
And not feel intimidated, because I mean, some of the designs out there, you feel like, I think I can wear it, but not really.
Yeah.
And then you're also worried about price as well, because certain things they look like, I don't think I can afford this. Yeah. So you're even scared to ask for the price. And obviously, people always say that if you have to ask for a price, then it means you can't afford it. So now, talking about that, as a fellow designer, what is your opinion on the Maxhosa by La Duma backlash regarding the pricing, particularly of his rugs?
I saw that. I don't actually know how much the rugs are.
11,000.
Really?
11,000. But bear in mind, Persian carpets, I mean,
that's cheapest, it? Is that what everyone's cheapest, making a big deal about?
The cheapest Persian rug is what? 15,000?
Yes.
So, I mean...
And I would buy a Makosa rug in a second.
I would too. I mean, not only because I love La Duma, but...
Yeah, but I don't know La Duma, and I just think his stuff is incredibly beautiful, but I would buy that rug. I mean, come on. I actually didn't know how much they were going for people to make that much of a fuss. And to be honest with you, I think it's a bit ridiculous to say it's too much. It comes back to people asking for a discount on something that's already...
Oh, I know.
You know, and I'm thinking, you're not walking into a European or American designer's place and asking for a discount. Yeah. Stop asking for the discounts.
Exactly.
You know.
I think you're referring to those stores. I'm not going to mention
names. I'm not going to mention names either. But you go in there, you pay and you get out.
The Diamond Walk in Central City. We're talking those brands, European brands. Why is it so difficult for South Africans to understand branding? The emphasis being target market and brand positioning. I say target market because his clientele, La Duma, that is, Maxhosa, the label, his clientele understands that mohair ain't cheap. You know that mohair ain't cheap.
Exactly.
And therefore his designs won't be cheap. No. I mean, why are we bitter or bitchy when we can't afford something instead of using that as a motivation to work harder?
Exactly. Exactly. I don't understand it either. So I did retweet a couple of those tweets where people were like, really, there was no need for the rant about these being too expensive, you know.
Because, I mean, as a designer, it can be an insult if I question why you charge $1,200 for that beautiful kimono that you're wearing. And personally, I wouldn't do that, not only because I know I want to support you, not only because I've known you for forever.
Yeah. Plus, you look great in my stuff.
You're too kind. But also, I appreciate your talent and the amount it takes for you to go and source. Absolutely. The efforts.
Yeah.
Let's say efforts. Efforts in me ending up wearing a Sheba Easy Living label on my back.
There's so much more that goes into it, you know, apart from the final product. And I think some people miss that step and think, oh, no, well, it's just a satin thing. It's not really.
It's more than that.
Yeah.
I think that caliber of a person that would give La Duma a hard time about his costing model, they strike me as the very same person who would ask for a discount from a lady at the street corner,
at the market or at the taxi rank
who's selling apples and bananas. That's the kind caliber of person that would go and ask for a discount from a woman that's there from 7 in the morning selling fruits and vegetables till late
at
night.
But you still want a discount.
It's the same person.
Yeah. I totally agree with you. I totally agree.
That's my story, and I'm sticking to it. Yeah. You know, because when I mean we've just said that we never question, you know, the pricing of the uber lux European American brands, but we dare question why an African brand charges a particular amount for an item. It speaks very highly of the kind of person that the African person is, which is sad and pathetic.
Right.
So now, the label Sheba Golf.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that was a smart move. I mean, you enjoy playing.
Yes.
You enjoy watching the game.
Yeah.
I don't know how, because I mean, I'm a golf addict, but I can't sit there and watch golf.
I know. You know, a few people have said that to me. That I'll play, but I won't watch. I'll do both.
No, yeah. On TV, maybe if I'm channel surfing and there happens to be, you know, a player that I'm absolutely obsessed with.
I will walk all day.
I know. But But that's where I'm getting to. That you not only are you an avid or an addict as a golfer, not only as a blogger, not only as someone who's passionate about the game, and I mean you are so knowledgeable about the game, which is why you have become the go-to person for a lot of radio and TV stations when there's big tournaments in the country. I mean, we're going to talk about you. I mean, you get flown. This woman gets flown to the likes of Mauritius for golf tournaments. So you would not be invited to such tournaments if you were not knowledgeable about the game.
It helps.
So I mean, this helped expose a gap in the market, you know, an opportunity for an astute and savvy fashion designer like you.
Right. It really did. So, which is interesting because when I started playing, when was that? 14 years ago. The instinct was, ooh, golfware. Wow, wouldn't that be great? But then I decided, you know what? Actually, I'm not knowledgeable enough to start that. So I need to actually get into this game, play it, get to know what's going on before I can even venture that way. And I think I have, you know, I've waited long enough and I thought, well, you know what? This is the time. This is the time to do it. I'm excited about it. I'm doing more about it. I'm blogging about it. I'm playing more. I'm spending a lot of time on the golf course, and which means more golf gear to buy for me. And then I don't find anything I want to wear, right? And then I have my fellow golf ladies complaining about what they have to buy. And so the question is, when are you doing this? And so it was time. Everything sort of, you know, timing. I think it was all about timing.
Okay. So now, there are two things you never ask a woman. Her salary. And you know, do you know what the second one is?
Her age?
Her handicap. But I mean, I can't resist. I'm going to ask you anyway. I mean, I know your handicap.
Yes,
but
you
do know my handicap. I'm not going to blurt it out. But I mean, what was your lowest in the 14 years that you've played golf? I want you to tell me, if you can, your lowest handicap where you felt, you know what, I've never played better than this. I know your time in Zim, you played at least 3-4 times a week, which is... it's, you know, some people have jobs. You were playing golf.
I was working. I was a stay-at-home mom. That was a job and a half.
Some of us have to work, and you were just playing golf 4 times a week. It was a lot of golf. So I mean, what was your lowest handicap, and what has been the worst score you ever recorded? And did you submit your card?
I did. I submit my card. You know me. I'm known for submitting my cards and letting people know how badly I've played. But my lowest score was, my lowest handicap was 17.
Okay.
And that is because I played a lot in a space of seven months and the handicap dropped very fast. But then I moved. I moved to the US and I stopped playing for a good like 4 or 5 years. You know, having babies and also... golf was expensive in the US, so that kind of stopped for a while, and so the handicap sort of went away, and the rhythm stopped, you know, the because once you're in some kind of rhythm and something clicks, then the golf just becomes beautiful and easy. And well, not easy, you can't, golf is never easy, but you play better. And so that was the lowest. And I was playing at the time for the Silver Division and Borrowdale Brook in Zim, which was great. You know, I was Mashona Land's most improved golfer at one point. But I'm working on it. I'm working on bringing it down again. But, you know, the golf sometimes, like... clubs are not working in my bag. they're refusing to work. So it's a bit of a problem.
I know your favorite club is the 6-iron, right?
My favorite club is the 6-iron.
Mm, okay. So now, have you ever played so bad that you felt like abandoning play?
I played with you.
was that the
Evil
worst?
Canyon, that was my worst score.
Evil, that's why we call it Evil Canyon.
That was my worst score. I think I shot like 115. I was like, this is not it. I'm never coming back here again. It's never going to happen again, Sonia. No, this is it. I give up golf. I give up. Okay, maybe not the golf, but I will not come back here again. That was 150. Remember that? That was like, what, 3 years ago?
Three,
4 years ago. I shot 115 and I shouldn't have, but I did.
No, 115 is, I mean, I know Evil Kenyan is called Evil Kenyan for a reason, but 115.
It was 115, girl. It was bad. No, it was bad. Oh, that day.
But luckily you didn't destroy a club, because I know people who play so bad they destroy.
Like, I know. Like, I don't have the manpower to destroy a club, but I've thrown my club. I've thrown it on the golf course a few times, and I get it. I get it when guys do that, when they throw them in the... I can't... Listen, we can't throw them in the river like some people do in the lakes, but that day... If I was going to throw a club or break a club, that was the day.
And you lost a lot of balls as
I mean, I remember. God, how many balls did I lose? We were playing, I'm sure it was...
with Sondo.
With Hoot and who? And Matthew. I'm sure Matthew thought, what is Sonia doing?
Torture.
Oh my gosh, why did she invite these girls?
Where did she get these people? Oh, but he still loves me with my flaws, you know, and my handicapped friends.
Oh, man. But then we went back and we played and we did. We kind of redeemed ourselves a little bit.
Suck us for punishment. A little
bit. Yeah. I think the next time I played, it was like 102. I felt like 102.
Which is still bad.
Which is still bad, but it was better than that.
115.
Yeah.
So now you're in denial, right? You don't want to admit and use the title golf addict, but that's okay, because I mean, I'm also an addict, but at least I put it out there. I'm not in denial like you.
No, but did you see my bio? It says could be, maybe.
Yeah, yes. Exactly. But I think you and I both know, and many people who know what an avid golfer you are, people know that you are a golf addict. But I mean, I must say, I was not surprised when you first mentioned this girl's golf diary concept.
Yeah.
Something which has been well received.
Yeah.
I mean, I was reading the great reviews that you've been getting from social media and actual YouTube comments as well.
Yeah.
You've done exceptionally well.
It took me a long time to get there, because I think because golf has been so restrictive for especially women and black women. So it was a bit of a, do I really want to venture into this? You know, can I venture into this? What will the perception be? And a few times I've met people and they are shocked at how much I know about golf. Like, oh, we didn't actually expect you to know that much, you know. And so and it's always interesting when that happens, because, you know, but the reception from some of the golf people, the golf industry, has been really, really great. You know, it's welcoming. And so, yeah, it's interesting. It's been an interesting, something that I've wanted to do for a couple of years now. And I eventually just thought, you know what, actually, heck, let me just do it.
And so, you've never looked back.
And then this girl's golf diary came up, because I thought to myself, I want to talk about this. I want to share this. I have so much content. I play all the time and it's really just, it's fun. I enjoy this. And it's interesting, the people that followed and the people that, you know, that keep following and giving me the thumbs up. That's really cool.
I'm proud of you.
Thank you.
Oh, look at me. Can you see I'm blushing? I know I'm dark, but I'm sure you can see I'm blushing now. You know, I'm messing up my mascara as well. So now you're also a columnist for Tea and Sandwiches.
Yes.
A publication for all things golf related.
Yes.
My question is a very important question. When are we starting a campaign that will force all courses to build toilets?
On the course?
All courses.
On the golf
in the
course.
Country to build toilets. You heard me. And she's laughing, and she's a woman, and she needs a toilet just like I do when we play golf, because we can't.
Yeah, you know, because the guys just go into the bush.
Exactly,
right?
And
the guys
ladies
just go into the bush and they come out, and
And everything what happens, is hunky-dory, what
and you kind of have to hold it until you get to the halfway house. That's interesting. That's interesting. But you know, everything is slow with regards to women and in the golf industry. Everything is really, really slow. I mean, we're slowly getting invited to play on some golf courses eventually or be members. So toilets were never a thing to be considered for women. Mm-hmm. And the ones that do, you know, you always get shocked when you ask the caddy, is there a toilet in there? So, and then they say, yeah, next hole. And you're like, wow, really? There's actually a toilet on the next hole? Yeah.
I know.
That is such a sensitive subject.
I know. Because I know, but I had to ask. So, I mean, you, one of your other titles amongst many is you're an on-air sports commentator for major golf tournaments. As I mentioned earlier, I mean, you were invited to the AfriAsia tournament in Mauritius.
Why is that?
I mean, you get flown to Mauritius for 7 days, all expenses paid, just to go and watch golf and mingle with like top players around the world. I mean, it doesn't get better than that, does it?
No, that was actually fantastic. I mean, I when Mauritius Tourism contacted me, I was like, yes, big yes. What am I dropping? Oh my, there's no question about it. Because also, I watch the AfriAsia. I watched it the year before. I tweeted about it, and I was tweeting about it even before that, thinking I'm excited. The South African players, there's a whole bunch of them that go and play there, so it was exciting for me to be able to actually go and walk and support some of the guys and get to talk to them. I spoke to Dylan Fratelli, I spoke to Louis Diego, I spoke to a few of them before some of their tee-offs, and so that was really, really fun to do. And I got to play some of the most beautiful golf courses up there, you know.
I know. I'm not gonna start talking about my experience, because you know I had a negative experience.
But Mauritius, look, it's a golfer's paradise. I don't know if people go there with the intention of just playing golf, but that's what I would do.
Because golf destinations are becoming very popular.
Do you know what I mean? That's what I would do. Mm. I would book it with the intention of playing golf. And then the beach is like secondhand.
Exactly.
And everything later else is secondhand to, you know, just playing the golf courses.
So now, the other day, Wade Pretorius tweeted, Jack Nicklaus doesn't follow a single person on Twitter. Is that arrogant? He asked.
Yes.
Your response was, nope, he doesn't have to. Enlighten me, please.
Does he have to, really? Here's the thing. Do we have to follow the people that follow us on Twitter?
Not necessarily. I mean, I have people that follow me and I look at their bio or a few of their tweets, and if they rub me up the wrong way or if I feel that their views are not inclined to my views, or if I feel we're not in the same WhatsApp group and they tweet nonsense or derogatory comments every tweet, I'm not going to follow back. I mean,
that's a given.
But I mean, surely there is someone worth a follow. Like, I mean, he doesn't follow a single person. We're talking about Jack Nicklaus doesn't follow a single person. So I'm thinking there's someone
that tweets for him.
There's always somebody worth a follow. I mean, let's look at Paulo Coelho.
Yes.
Donald Trump.
Oh gosh, should we not? Can we not?
I know mentioning these two in one sentence is it's sacrilegious.
I was about to say
sacrilegious, right?
I mean, girl. Huh?
The former being a great mind, and the latter makes you question the average American state of mind.
I could say I have a lot to say, but my kids live there, so I'm
I know
like,
we're gonna get to it now. I know, I really just wanted to put you on the spot there, because I mean, I knew that Donald Trump holds a very special place in your heart,
man,
because of your love for Alabama. You have a few hearts there,
yes.
Tell me about that.
My few hearts in Birmingham, Alabama.
Oh.
My babies.
Blushing mother.
Yeah. My boys live there with their dad. And it's home. You know, it was home for me for a little bit. So it's home, and it's so this whole thing obviously with America and Donald Trump is a bit frustrating, and I've had conversations with my kids about that. You know, my 10-year-old doesn't quite comprehend, but the older boys do, you know, the older kids do. So, and we've had some interesting conversations, and I'm just happy to know that my kids are conscious black boys growing up in South America, you know. So yeah, I'm happy that I'm doing that job from a distance really well, keeping them conscious about who they are, where they are, you know, and all of that, and where they come from. So yeah, it's a pity that they've had to live in, I said it's a pity they've had to live in America in the time of Trump. I would have rather they lived in America in the time of Obama, which we did for a bit. So, but they were not old enough to grasp the magnitude of being in the US during Obama's campaign and all of that stuff.
Did you influence them? Because I know they all love football. As in soccer. Because okay, I know, well, American football is,
yeah,
different to,
I know, to soccer, to soccer, yeah, our soccer. No, I had nothing to do with the soccer. It's all their dad. He's a huge soccer fan who is a basketball coach. So it's a bit of a, you know, but they all play soccer. Everything, and they are obsessed, obsessed, obsessed. That house is obsessed with soccer. I know so much about soccer that people don't know I know about so much because of growing up with boys in an environment who just are obsessed about everything soccer.
And you know the offside rule, obviously.
I know. I played a bit of soccer in high school, yeah, so I know the rules.
No, because I know, you know, the old joke is always that, geez, how many times do I have to explain the offside rule to my woman?
Yes. No. I'm one of those ones you don't have to explain much sport to. But soccer is a big deal. It's a big deal. I just asked, just 2 days ago, I'm talking to my 10-year-old. Hey, listen, guy. So what you going to... I just throw it out there sometimes. So what you going to do when you grow up? Says soccer player. I was like, wow. You too? You too. Yeah.
So, I mean, how do you manage? I mean, it must be very difficult for you. I mean, not only are they thousands of kilometers away, but the time difference as well. How do you juggle that? I mean, you probably need to wake up at odd hours to be able to communicate with them, yeah, because when they're sleeping, we awake.
Yeah,
and
seven hours. Yeah. So I get excited when the daylight saving time goes down to 7 hours from 8. I do a whoop whoop.
Yeah.
You know, I get to FaceTime at 2 instead of 4,
yes,
or 3, you know, but we do it every day.
Yeah, I love that.
We do it every day. There's no day that goes by. If it does, it's because they're traveling to a soccer tournament somewhere. But it's an everyday thing. You know, they fight on FaceTime and I have to stop fights via FaceTime. I do reading via FaceTime, you know. I choose garments for dances over, I mean, outfits for dances over FaceTime. So, yeah, it's an everyday thing. I mean, I made the choice for them to go and live with their dad, and it was a tough decision to make, but a good decision overall. So we're making it work.
Do you think it was easier for them to be away from you, considering they're boys and they're with their dad, and therefore it's all about testosterone in one household?
I don't know if it was easy. Yeah, they're also such mama's boys.
No, so, of course I know, because I've got two boys.
Hence I did the inverted commas. Yeah. I don't know what it would have been like if it had been my daughter, or if they were girls, but I am happy that it's a bunch of boys, and it is a man's house. It's a boy's, yeah, house, and they do a lot of sports in the house, and it's a nice energy to watch happen between them and their dad. And then when they're with me, it's all cuddles and hugs and kisses, and I'm not there. If you fall, oh, you're gonna be good, you're good, you're good, you're good, give me a high five, I'm on something, come here, let me give you a hug, let me give you a kiss, where does it hurt? So, and they know the difference.
No, boys are very, yeah, close to their mom.
you know, because you got boys. Yeah,
yeah, and, yeah, and 9-year-old, yeah, particularly. I mean, he tells me like, yeah, 10 times a day how much he loves me. And
yeah, well, I get WhatsApps every day, every single day.
I love
you. And so, yeah, you know, mornings we FaceTime while they have breakfast and brush their teeth before school, and then after school, and, you know, we stay on top of it. And then see each other every 6 months or every summer and Christmas holidays.
And they get a nice 3 month summer
break,
right?
They get a nice 3 month summer break.
Yeah.
Which is, it's actually 2.5 months, but so that's kind of nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, I'm going to give you, well, I'm going to read out a few names, and you need to give me the first word that comes to mind. No ifs, no buts. Are you ready?
Okay.
Louis Oosthuizen. One word.
Nice.
Wow, the lady next door is nice. And she just said Louis Oosthuizen is nice. Wow.
No, okay. I mean, he seems like, look, no, I actually, funny, I haven't met him. But okay. He really seems like if I came up to him, he would be really nice to me.
Okay.
So I don't know.
I'd be offended if you mention nice after my name is mentioned. Anyway, let's move on. Like I said, the lady next door is nice. Okay, moving along. Stacey Bregman.
Strong.
Tiger Woods. Ooh, she's melting now. Ooh, look at it. Ooh, do you want water? Do you want water? I asked you for one word. Tiger Woods. She's speechless. One word.
Epic.
I knew that. That was so predictable. Phil Mickelson.
Oh, lefty.
Is that all? Lefty? We know he's a lefty.
Wow.
Okay. Okay. Let's
America's sweetheart.
America's sweetheart is two words, but anyway.
No,
yeah,
I don't know.
You've been influenced by the American culture.
That's true, right?
And most Americans don't know how to speak English. Anyway, let's move on. James Kamte. She's speechless. Nobuhle Dlamini.
Fire.
Okay. All right. So now, you have an opportunity, a lifetime opportunity, to pick three players to make up your four ball. Any player in the world and which golf course, anywhere in the world.
Wow. Tiger Woods.
Mm-hmm. Obviously.
Nobuhle Dlamini.
Okay.
Do they have to be professional golfers?
No. But they need to be able to play to keep up with Tiger Woods.
Michael Phelps.
Okay, and where are you playing?
Wow, that's a good one. Augusta.
Okay, obviously, because you just watched the...
Is it because of the Masters?
Though.
Yeah, no, but really, really, Augusta. Not St. Andrews. I know what someone would say, St. Andrews. No, Augusta.
Okay, Felicity, Sheba, Miss Easy Living, Miss Sheba Golf, Miss All Things Fabulosity. Thank you so much.
Oh my goodness, this has been so much fun.
I know.
You're amazing.
You
are.
Oh, stop it. Stop it, I like it. give me another compliment? Just kidding.
You don't need them. Oh, thank you so much for having me. This was fun. This was really good.
Before you go, now that your kimono has flown off of your shoulders, tell me, how many tattoos do you have?
Oh, 12.
And you're still planning on getting more?
Yes.
So you have 12?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you for spending your time with me here on the Opinion Booth.
Thank you for having me.
And stay fabulous. And stay young. And, you know, keep doing what you're doing to stay youthful. And I still can't believe you age. It's ridiculous. I won't mention your age. Because
It's not important.
Your age and your face don't match. I mean, you would put a lot of teenagers to shame.
Yeah, my daughter wouldn't agree.
And your daughter's gorgeous, Maxine. Wow. Oh,
she's old.
Nah, she is a knockout.
Aww.
She is a knockout. Thank you so much for spending your time with me.
Thank you.
So now allow me to share the following by C. Joy Bell C. And I mean, you influence what I'm about to read because you strike me as being on that path or on that journey. And at peace because your aura exudes what I'm about to read. The older we get, the more picky we become about the expenditure of our energies. The older we become, the more we ask ourselves, is this person worth the energy, the time? And is a situation worth this kind of energy and time? We become choosy about who and what we spend energy on. We allow ourselves to be freed from the people and the things that simply don't deserve our life force. The older we get, the more we realize how precious our life force is and how much we are to guard it and keep ourselves wrapped inside the kind of energies that serve our purpose. That was C. Joy Bell C. If you don't know C. Joy Bell C, then Lord have mercy. Aspire to inspire before you expire.
This is CliffCentral.com.